Hi, everybody. Welcome to the SOM TV podcast. My name is Jason Wise. We are thinking about everybody up in the Bay Area and people in Oregon who have dealt with all of these insane fire after fire after fire and COVID before it. Our heart goes out to all of you who are still dealing with the glass fire up in Napa. We were up there and had to deal with it for a little bit ourselves. And I just want anybody who's listening to this, it's a very serious thing. This is going to be an interesting vintage. Please go to cafirefoundation.org to help with the California fires. It's really important. On today's podcast, I am speaking with my good friend and all-around wine genius, Matthew Kaner. Matthew Kaner is a restaurateur and a sommelier here in Los Angeles. We're going to talk about Oktoberfest, the history and everything behind it. It's going to be a fun talk. We're going to drink some beer, too. Today's episode is sponsored by A Closer Look on SOM TV. If you are a SOM TV subscriber, you know our series, A Closer Look, which takes a look at different regions from closer perspectives. Right now, we have episodes going up on Sonoma, and one just went live with Ted Lemon that talks about the Sonoma coast. They are beautifully shot and very informative. SOMTV.com is $49.99 for the year or $5.99 a month. Please go to SOMTV.com to sign up. Matt Kaner, how are you, my friend?
My man, I'm doing well, and you can introduce me anytime. I think I'm going to hire you as my hype man, officially.
Your hype man. I would love to be your hype man. And I'm so excited to talk about Oktoberfest. I had a pile of sausages last weekend, which was the inspiration for me calling you and saying, hey, can we do a podcast about Oktoberfest so that I can drink beer and eat sausage while we talk?
So how many sausages constitutes a pile?
A pile, I believe, in Bavaria equals 19.
Damn. Yeah, so it's a baker's like dozen plus six?
Yeah, that's exactly right. It's called a six and house.
Six and housen. Yeah.
Six and housen. I am wearing the little German waitress outfit right now, the St. Pauli girl thing. You should see me. I look fantastic.
Oh man, I got to tip you.
All right, I'm taking this way off track. Oktoberfest. How do we start a conversation about Oktoberfest, which is upon us?
So here in America, Oktoberfest is a really interesting concept. So first off, we as a literal nation, and the language of German is very literal, so it's funny how we assume Oktoberfest starts in October. Not the case. Oktoberfest actually starts in September. But Oktoberfest is the largest folk festival in the world. They draw an annual amount of 6 million people over this 16 to 18 day festival. And it originally started as a commemoration of a very famous wedding. The wedding did happen in October, October 12th, 1810. It was the wedding of Prince Regent Ludwig of Bavaria and Princess Therese of Saxony, Hildburghausen. And he later became King Ludwig I. I think there was many Ludwigs to follow, and I love that name, so I like saying it correctly. It's not Ludwig, it's Ludwig.
Real party animal, that Ludwig.
Right? So here we know Oktoberfest to be the place you go and just get fucked up and house yourself full of beer. You wear the cool necklace of pretzels. And if any of you are as big a fans from your childhood as Broken Lizard as I am, you know Beerfest, the film, right? That's what we think of. But
yes.
But Oktoberfest was originally a horse race. That's how it began. Its humble beginnings was as a horse race. So the princess, Therese, was apparently a very big fan of all things horse. She was a horse keeper. And so 5 days after the wedding, they had this amazing horse race as a commemoration of the wedding. And the royal celebrations back in the 1800s, I guess, in Bavaria were a big deal where everyone's, whether you're happy or not for them, you actually are happy for them because you don't have to work. You probably don't have to pay taxes that week. You get to drink more beer than normal. And it became this just scene of debauchery for years to come.
You know, it's really, if any chance I get to see the Germans cut loose, I am in.
Right? Because these are people collected and in their own head usually. But you give them like 3 glasses of Riesling or like 4 Hefeweizens and damn, they're a different person.
Yeah, it's basically, for me, it's Oktoberfest and anytime Rammstein plays, I am all over that. I just want to see Germans cut loose.
Rammstein is so aggressive.
So aggressive. So this only goes back to the 1800s? I thought it would have been older.
1810. And what's kind of interesting, 2020, obviously being a very weird year of congregation and parties and, South by Southwest got canceled. I mean, I don't have to name what got canceled. Everything got canceled. Every person listening, you had everything canceled. So you know everything's canceled. But ironically, this huge party they do since 1810 has a history of cancellation. And sometimes war, sometimes money problems. In the past, it's also been a bit of a revelation with, I guess, pandemic or other kind of medical issues and public health problems. So 4 years after the first, the Napoleonic War starts. And Napoleon, being the son of a bitch he was, I guess he liked all the Riesling, wanted to come in and steal it all. And he shut down for 4 years, Oktoberfest, mailed. And then flash forward to 40 years later, cholera hits. I don't ever want to get cholera. I don't know if that's still a thing. Let's hope it's not. I'm not educated on cholera. Hold on.
Can we take one quick step back? So you're saying the Napoleonic Wars happened over Riesling. This is the development. I was unaware.
No, I'm not rewriting history. I'm saying I'm guessing that he was known to love Sauternes and love champagne and love all things decadent.
I was going to say, they have some decent wines over there. I think there was other issues he invaded Prussia for, but—
Yeah.
So then
I don't know. I'm not as short as he is, so I can't tell you, but I do think that Riesling might have played a part, but I'm not rewriting history. No, I'm not Tarantinoing this.
Fair. Very good. Okay. So then cholera. So we have Napoleonic Wars. So it's a baby, 5 years of it, 5 years of drinking beer and celebrating a horse race. and then Napoleonic Wars shut it down for 4 years, and then it's back on and then shut down for cholera.
Well, and so what's funny about the cholera is they're like, cholera, I'm not going to die. Fuck it. Let's go drink beer still. And instead of having the like huge crowds and like, you know, total insanity, it just was tamped down and it didn't cancel it entirely, but it was probably like the fire fest of Oktoberfest, you know, like it wasn't, no one was going big. They were eating like a piece of bread and some bologna instead of having decadent 4-star meals. You know, it was just not what it should have been for a long time. That was 1854 that cholera came in and said, you know, slow down. And then again, cholera rears its head in 1866. I guess for 12 years, it was all cicada-like, had to go hide in the shadows and then find its way into your GI again.
Yeah, cholera is a nasty, that is a nasty disease.
No,
oh boy.
Thank you.
And really and then, contagious.
And then the Austro-Prussian War happens and, you know, the Germany, I guess at that point, it's not Germany. It's, you know, at that point, it's Bavaria. Bavaria sides on the war. And so 1873, there was a cancellation. And what's funny about this, the same timing is when Alsace is going back and forth between France and Spain, obviously in a very different, between France and Germany. Goodness. I haven't even cracked my beer yet and I can't talk.
It's all right. Sorry. Welcome to the SOM TV podcast.
Hello, SOM TV podcast world. I have not drank yet. I am sober.
That's your problem.
I can't get the facts right. I know. And then, so another like 30 years of uninterrupted beer drinking happens. And then the biggest world war of the early 1900s happens, World War I. You guys are familiar with World War I. It was the first one. That took the festivities out for 4 more years. We all know World War I was a lot of devastation, a lot of rewriting of maps and borders, and Germany, very importantly, becomes kind of demarcated. Italy becomes demarcated at that point. There's some real world kind of definition that comes out of World War I, and the festival came back. 1919, it was time to drink. It was time to celebrate. Horse races aplenty.
So is it in Germany still, do they still do horse racing around this time? Or is it just, you know, dress up in the outfits and clink beer?
It's a great question. And I actually don't know, but I want to get this. I do need this beer to get open because otherwise I'm going to misspeak and that's not fair to our listeners.
That's true. Only my mom listens to this podcast anyway. So
Jason's mom. Cheers.
To Jason's mom, yeah.
What you all think I'm drinking is a German Hefeweizen. What I'm actually drinking, only I will know.
Please just tell me it's not like a hard seltzer.
I'm not drinking a Corona Light seltzer, no Bud Light seltzer, no White Claws. I've only had a White Claw one time, and I crushed it. It was actually after we filmed Malibu the first time.
I remember.
I drank it in 2 seconds, and I wouldn't say I won't have one again, but I'm definitely going to do it sporadically and spread out and always on camera.
How noble always. Of you. I'm drinking a German beer as one should, talking about Oktoberfest. I guess if we're going to get dorky about history here, we should mention Germany is like the Germany we think of today. It's pretty much like an 1870, you know, unification, right? Both of these things, Oktoberfest and Germany, are from the 1800s as far as like the modern you know,
absolutely. Yeah, prior to that, you got the Austro-Hungarian Empire, and you've got Prussia, and you've got Bavaria. All in, you know, there was individual kind of parts that teamed up and became a larger force. And then
Saxony and all these places,
right. And what we think of as Germany, I mean, it's late 1800s. And
okay,
fortified and given much more power in World War I time, exactly.
Oh yeah, absolutely. So okay, so it goes. So it goes, you know, it goes away from World War One. Obviously, I mean that is a horrific, horrific, horrific thing. And then
so much death.
After World War One, Germany is completely and totally put in the dumps. You know, with the Weimar Republic and all that stuff. Following World War One, having to pay back all these debts, did they have any fun during that interwar period?
I think they had no choice but to have fun. There was a sense of like, you know, life is tough, money's hard. What can we afford? I mean, people aren't going to stop drinking, let's be honest. So they had an uninterrupted 28 years. And then a guy we know as Hitler came along, and things got interrupted again with World War II. Big time interruption. It was a heart-stopping, life-stopping experience for everyone there. You were either in the war or you were dying kind of thing. And, you know, no one wants to talk about that period. I think a lot of Germans that I'm friends with all of them are embarrassed by that period. And history has not been kind to that time. But there was a lot of drinking to come next. Very much a lot of drinking. And in fact, 72 uninterrupted years of drinking to come next up until modern day, 2020, the most recent cancellation of Oktoberfest.
That's a nice little history there. I appreciate that. All right. So why beer with Oktoberfest? Germany makes a ton of wine. Why do we drink beer? Can you tell the reason?
I don't know the why beer. That's a great question. I probably should have researched that. I don't know the why beer.
I would speculate it's because the area in which this
origin
came from, you know, the South is the, correct me if I'm wrong here, but I mean the more southern part of Germany would be more beer and the more northern would be more wine. Would you say that?
Bavaria has a bit of wine in the Munich area and the Bavarian Appellation, but it's not like being 45 minutes outside of Frankfurt. It's not like being in the Rheinhessen, the Nahe, Mosel. It's not like being in Pfalz. It's not like being in Rheingau. It's not like being in all those Franconia or, you know, those are very different regions, very different prowess. The South is where basically the understanding that Germany has, like all things, they like to be very precise and very clinical about it. And actually back to 1516, there was what's called the Reinheitsgebot, which is the purity law of beer, was instituted. And because of that, for now, you know, 500 years, you've only been able to make beer out of yeast, malt, hops, and water. Four ingredients, nothing else. So because of that clinical purity, German beer is very limited in what they can make, and the styles are very defined. And I think for what's cool for the beer out of Bavaria especially, they focus on making the right beer for 400, 500 years, not making as many cool styles of beer we can make and trying what's popular. They want to get the style of beer correct. And I, you know, be an old school soul that I be, I love that. I also think in 2020, it's a little tricky to continue to make money that way and like have, you know, it's not the best marketing tool in the Instagram age and the natural wine phase and craft beer, but they do have temperature variants. They can use different yeasts. You know, there's so many styles of beer within that definition, the purity law for what it allows. I mean, they do have so many different things they can make. Usually the styles are defined by what yeast is local to the region. You know, like they're going to make a different beer up in the north than they're going to make in the south. If they're making lager, they're making Pilsner. You've got Helles lager. You've got kind of the Berliner Weiss, something a little bit lighter and with a little bit of wheat. There's just so many different styles that they can make within their definition, but they're not all trying to go out and make fruit beers and hoppy beers and all this. They're not trying to be San Diego, let's put it that way. And San Diego has not really influenced them entirely. But what's cool about that also is like Germany is known for this excellence. Like quality is so important in everything German, whether it be wine, beer, cars, you know, whatever you buy German, the excellence is always like the top level. And you know, like you pointed on it, like Bavaria is a beer region. So I guess they could have shipped all the Riesling from the Mosel down, but why not just drink what's local? They've got all the beer right there. They got, you know, Weihstephan has been around for 1,000 years. That's the longest standing brewery in the world.
That's incredible. Man, I got to get to that place. That's I can only imagine the stories there.
I haven't been down to Bavaria yet, embarrassingly.
It's I've been through it. It is pretty cool. Very lot of forest. It is very, you know, in a good way, stereotypical of what you think of when you think of like Germany. You know, it's got that very like little villages, you know, lots of beer. But so okay, I want to talk about the food at Oktoberfest here for a hot minute, because this is like, I'm dead serious. I mean, I have like favorite meals in the world. You know, I could always eat sushi. I mean, most Japanese food I could eat anytime, any day. I could eat, you know, most Italian food. I mean, geez, now I start thinking about it, almost all French food, whatever. But German, the typical German, like, I guess, stereotypical Oktoberfest kind of stuff, where you're looking at like sausages and sauerkraut and mustard that's real hot and mustard that's real sweet. And that is amongst my favorite meals on the planet.
Oh, it's
and
so
I,
good.
I say this
it's
with so good. No hyperbole. I love it. I crave it. It is so incredible. But it also is in your profession of pairing liquids with solids, I find it to be a really interesting place to deviate and do interesting things. And it's of course, anybody who's ever been to a ball game, anybody who's ever had a bratwurst, you know, beer is just fantastic with hot dogs, sausages, that kind of stuff. It works really well.
Absolutely. Cuts right through it. Yep.
Yeah. And I wonder to ask a stupid question, if you can tell me, because if you put mustard, ketchup, sauerkraut, onions, pickles even sometimes, if you put all these things on a sausage or whatever.
On the Frankfurter,
How does that, why does beer work so well chemically or, you know, because we all know it works, but why?
Yeah. So, the German style of beer will be very yeasty in the Hefeweizen style, right? So that yeast, that texture, you get some spice, you get kind of like, there's a fruitiness that happens. You get a lot of times orange peel, orange oil. That works really well with something kind of more bitter. I love sauerkraut. I love mustard. They tend to give a little bit of bitter qualities, especially that kind of yellow mustard, old school style of mustard they like. And it just pairs really well together. A crisp, clean lager or a pilsner. Sometimes the German style of pilsner has a little more hops than I tend to like for that style of beer. I just like it really crisp and clean. But like that cold as fuck, you know, 28 ounce out of a boot style lager, that just washes everything down. I mean, that's like, you're not even drinking it for flavor at that point. That gets your palate ready for the next bite. It's like the ginger to your sushi, you know? And
that's a great analogy. That's a really great analogy.
Just wiping it clean, right? So acid in wine is super big. Acid in beer is not as big. And so you get a lot of the acid from like the sauerkraut or from the mustard a lot of times. There's like knockwurst, for instance. You've got the kind of garlicky, smoky flavor. So you might want a malted beer with that. You might want to go more of like the Bock, the traditional smoked Bock, like a toasted Bock. Or if you're going to do a blood sausage, you might want to do a little bit more of like a funky, feral, like, I don't know, like the natural wine of beer there, like a Helles. No, I would say a Berliner Weiss, like they're more wild style, not fully fermented. They're not like, you know, that style of beer is a little more sour, a little bit more, you know, it's like what all the natural wine kids want in beer, even though they've been doing it for hundreds of years. It's not like a new thing. That's going to go great with an often served cold blood sausage, which scares the shit out of most people.
Let's talk about it. Okay, so blood sausage, at least my favorite that I've had in Germany, and then I have it here often, is called Blutwurst. And I'm going to butcher all of this stuff.
But Blutwurst,
it's your typical blood sausage type of a thing. And that sausage in particular is made, and I think it's really important because, sausages, I think in a lot of cases you have that term of like, ooh, no, you don't want to see what the sausage is made out of. But I have seen what these are made out of. And sausages that are pure and good are made out of good things. They're not, you know, they are not like throw just all the crud in there and try to blend them into a shape. In Germany and Alsace and, you know, respectful people who make sausages, they take it very seriously what is in
them. Especially blood sausage. That's absolutely, it's one of the most important. I've actually done it. I've made it. I've been in an amazing pig farm in Portugal up in Vinho Verde. and we got to make blood sausage, and we made blood pudding as well. And it really changed my mind because, you know, when I was the one who got to help put the animal down, and it you know, when you know you're going to use the whole animal, it changes things. And I don't like to be someone who said, oh, I've killed a pig, I put a pig down. But I love pigs, but they're also tasty. And I also don't want to waste all the insides and all the things. If you're going to do that and put an animal down, you have to make use of all of it, be much more kind of spiritual about it, and let its life not go in vain. And
I couldn't agree more. I mean, we have an entire film, Matt, coming called The Whole Animal to Sun TV, which I've worked on for years. And that's the whole concept. I think the word blood scares people and makes them think gross. But I will say, in a lot of parts of the, especially Asia and Central Europe, and just a number of places, blood is never goes to waste. I mean, it's flavorful.
Can't. Exactly. Yeah, and it's flavorful. Also, it changes so much with the temperature, the way that, so like obviously in a warm environment in the insides of an animal or a human or whatever, you know, it's got a purpose. It delivers oxygen. It is what it is. But as soon as it's no longer in a living body, it turns into a very different liquid. It becomes more solid. It congeals. It's a binding agent in food making.
This podcast is not for vegans.
If you are vegan, I apologize. I still love you. We're talking blood sausage, baby. This is we're savages today. Bring the savage energy.
Oktoberfest. You know, I've been to Germany many times, and I don't think that I've been to so many meals, and I've often wondered if I were a vegetarian, how do you even tell them that? I mean, how do you even say? I remember asking, you know, we're off topic a bit here, but I remember asking a winemaker from Schloss Schönborn. We were having lunch with him, and he gave me this sandwich, essentially, and it had a sausage in it, and it was cut up into pieces. And I said to him, what animal is this made from? And he looked at me, no expression on his face. He just goes, all types of animals. And then went back to eating. And I was like, what in the
Why
world?
Why are you concerned?
Yeah. What kind of answer is that? The blood thing is one that I would say, you know, I think everybody who has, if you have never had a blood sausage or never had blood pudding or any of these things, especially, in Ireland and Scotland, it is among the most delicious things ever. But if you haven't had it, give it a try. And so just like the blutwurst is traditionally made, you know, they make it with pork rind. So it has like a smoked pork rind in it. That's what gives it a lot of its body. And then it's made with blood and has some fat in it. And then they cook it down, you know, with barley. And so there's a little bit of barley in there, and it has this really delicious texture. I mean, it tastes like a sausage. You're not going to go, oh, it tastes like blood. I mean, it's a sausage. And so
there's an irony quality to it, but it's
it's saltier and irony.
You have to have a really defined palate, I think, to really catch that. It's what's going to freak people out more than the flavor, because they're going to be surprised the flavor is not like – you're not going to become Dracula. You know, you're not a vampire all of a sudden. The texture is a little different than a traditional – like mostly meat sausage, and also the color is going to freak people out a little bit because it does have that kind of like oxidized iron, like an old, it's like a copper made it back in the 1700s color to it, you know, like rusty.
This is what I'm here for. This just conversations about blood sausage.
Hey.
All right, so wait, let's keep going. So I think like the other sausages that people would really, really, really know would be bratwurst, you know?
Yep.
And bratwurst is one of these, it's like, probably one of the most famous sausages in the world, I think, just from a standpoint, if you're going to name one.
If you've ever had currywurst, it's the one they traditionally use for that. And, you know, it's going to be pork and beef put together, grilled up. It looks like a traditional, what we think like an American, like a long hot dog sausage, but it's not, you know, it's not, I don't want to be too rude. But you know, it's not all lips and anus like a lot of those weird American dogs that we put in our mouths these days.
Jesus,
dude, this is what people say for years. Is that Psalm TV Podcast Nation? Is that too rude, crude?
Mama, I'm sorry. He said anus. All right. So
shall I use the medical term next time?
No, that is the medical term. All right. So,
I know.
So okay. So with the bratwurst though. Let's talk about what you would pair, because I think, you know, you can cook a bratwurst by, I think mostly it's over coals, but you can also cook it, you can boil it. Like
you could boil it if you don't have like a flat top, or if you don't have a barbecue. And traditionally, they'll do it with a more sweet mustard, rather than the like kind of grainy, more kind of bitter style or acidic style. And I think that allows for Hefeweizen to work really well. Or this is one of the few where I'm like, no, you need wine, baby. We need some wine here, maybe.
Love it. What wine?
Oh, let me tell you about some wine. So a newer winery that's been around since now 2013 in Bavaria, which is rare. This really great natural winemaker. Name's Michael Volker. He fell in love with a lovely lady named Melanie Dress, and they lived all throughout Germany, London, New York, and headed back in 2013 to take over his father's estate, help out. And the dad actually is a very important person in the appellation there. He's on the quality control board. So he's someone who, imagine someone whose job it is to uphold quality control in Germany. They're probably going to be the most clinical person of all time.
But can you pronounce that control board's name?
I don't have it in front of me. I'll have to get it. I don't remember.
It's just really hard. No, it's like Kuala Kazi. It's just really hard to say.
I literally have to write it down and then say it 25 times with no one listening and mess it up and then say it once to get it right. Like do it live style. I can't do it. I don't know. Anyway, so his father is the least likely person to be like, oh yeah, go ahead and make natural wine. That's a good idea. But he's very proud of Michael's pursuits. And so the winery is two Naturkinder. They make very clean style natural wines in the white world. They also make really, really, really cool skin contact wines. And in particular, I love his Heimat Silvana. This is known because it has a really cool horse on the label. The label's gangster. I love it. And Silvana is a... Yeah, it's so gangster. Silvaner's borrowed throughout Northern Italy and Alto Adige and throughout Austria and in Germany. You see it all over Germany. You'll see it in the West. You'll see it in the East. You'll see it in the South. He makes a style that can hold up to that sweet mustard that's going to give kind of like a, it's going to coat your palate. And so you need something with a little acidity, something with a little bit of fruit, not too tannic, not too bitter, and it's a really clean style. And he likes to use native yeast, so you always get that kind of like a little bit feral ending on the wine, which I like. And so I highly recommend you guys all check out the two Naturkinder wines. They are from Bavaria. You want those when you're at or celebrating Oktoberfest. And cheers to Michael and Melanie. They know what's up.
That's great. I think Silvaner is a grape too, is one of the world's underrated white grapes. I really do.
Agreed.
I've been lucky enough when we filmed the whole animal to spend a lot of time in Alto Adige. And there's quite a bit of Silvaner there. And it is, it's delicious. It really is. And it's so affordable and so...
Totally.
It has character, and yet it's approachable and crisp. And, it's got all the things you want. I couldn't agree more with that wine as a sausage wine. It is great call.
And I want to add, thank you. I want to add for those of us listening in California... especially, kind of calling back on all the fires and trying to give support locally. The Scribe Winery from Sonoma has an incredible old vine plot of Silvaner from the original planting of the vineyard, and their Silvaner is next level for California style. So definitely check that out.
Wow, that's great intel. I'm in. That's fantastic. All right, so for the brats, you have to have something that cuts through all of the, pickled, the sauerkraut, through the mustard, cuts through the fat, cuts through all this stuff. I'm trying to think what other, I guess another sausage that's worth mentioning, because if people are still with us, they're in, is one of my favorites. It's the Weisswurst, which is like it's like fresh every single day, made from veal and sometimes like back bacon. And that's no preservatives. So this is one of those sausages that you have to get in the morning and then... What do they say? There's like this saying in Germany that like the Weisswurst, you can't sell it after like the noon chime of the church.
It's got to be before noon. Right. Yep. Exactly.
And because it's just
because there's no skin, there's no preservative. It's all you get it, you eat it, and you have to long for it the next 24 hours. Otherwise, you ain't having it again.
Right. Exactly. And it's that sausage for people who are unfamiliar. It looks almost white. And it's cooked mostly in water, though I will say if you cook it on the grill, it is fantastic. You just have to make sure it doesn't burst. Yeah, it depends on how it's made. But if you cook it on the grill, you just don't want it on really, really high temp because it'll burst open and then it does fall apart. But if you don't, I did that last week and I cooked it both ways, water and on the grill, and I was pleasantly surprised how well it did it on the grill, and I really like the char flavor. It's good.
Was that part of your pile?
That was part of my pile, yes.
Oh,
that was
man.
Part of my pile.
You went vice first all the way out in the Sherman Oaks neighborhood?
No, down by my father and mother-in-law's house, there is a place called Old World in like Huntington Beach, California.
Oh, right.
And it is basically
This is where the big Oktoberfest happens in our
area. Huge Oktoberfest. It is unfortunately canceled, as most are, or at least at a very low level. And but they have probably some of the best sausages you can get. And it's an entire wow. German shop. It's like Old World Deli is what it's called. They have all these pastries. And, you know, we got like real Vienna apple strudel and all these things. And it was a really, really great afternoon. But that's where I got the sausages. They have delicious Hungarian sausages. I mean, you know, I'm plugging them. So if you're in Southern California, you should go get the sausages at Old World Deli. It's unbelievable. But it's a great place as far as like to get. That's where I bought all this stuff. And we bought it in the morning and we had it, you know, same deal.
Crushed it.
But the Weisswurst, you know, that's a really, really delicious one. Very mild. You know, so that's one that I think you pretty much just eat these with mustard traditionally.
Yeah, exactly right.
Yeah, that one, you know, we drank a little bit of Riesling and had some beer, and that one was excellent with the Riesling, you know.
Well, and a nice segue Riesling-wise, another winery I always have to recommend. I finally got to visit them in January of 2019. That's Emrich Schönleber. Big fan of their wines in the Naha region.
Oh, great, beautiful region. Beautiful,
they took
beautiful
me through. There. They took me to a vineyard that was planted in 778. Do the math, y'all. We're in 2020. That vineyard's been there since 778. And I'm going to butcher the pronunciation. Thank you for listening. Zimonsinger Frühlingsspatzlen.
Well, that's pretty good. I mean, at least someone German would at least understand what you said.
Corrected five times. No way. No. If you don't say it correctly, they do not understand. That's how it works in German.
Or they act like they don't understand, maybe.
So the Germans and also people in Madrid, that's how it works. If you speak Spanish to Madrid people, and it's not perfect, they look at you like you're an alien, even though they know exactly what you're saying.
Yeah.
The Germans are very similar. The difference is in Germany, they will correct you. And in Madrid, they'll just look at you like they don't know you're alive.
It's better than going to Barcelona and speaking Spanish. They'll just kick you out there because you're not
speaking
Catalan.
People might. They also, but yeah. They're more likely to appreciate you speaking English there. So it works out for us.
Yeah, that's fair. Well, I'm trying to think what other food items should we talk about for Oktoberfest? I mean,
pretzels.
It's
all about
pretzels.
Pretzel. I mean, come on.
Okay.
So you've got these big dudes in their, you know, the basically like the traditional gown, like Lederhosen style, and they all have this wire around them with so many pretzels that are, you know, if you don't have pretzels on you all day, you might not eat for a while. And with the amount of beer you're consuming, you have to have. First off, the baked pretzels on your person, and then you can forever buy these really delicious pretzels everywhere you go as well. They're so much more fresh and amazing than like the ones you might have gotten when you were a kid at a stop at a park in New York City. Like it's not those weird ones from the ballparks we get here in America, unless maybe you're in Wisconsin at a Brewers game because they know what's up there. They are very German there, so they do it right. But anywhere else you go, like the American pretzel is not what you get in Germany. The German pretzel is a thing of beauty. It's doughy. It's textured. The mustards are plenty. There's like 20 different mustards you can throw on sometimes. And it just
and some of it's spicy as hell, which is, oh, I mean, the real hot mice.
Like horseradish. Mustard. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And that gets me going. That stuff is, you don't find that a lot in the American palate, that they want that kind of sensation. But I love it, man. It is just great
yeah.
stuff.
And then another thing that's fun you can find there, the Landjager, which is a dried sausage, and that's made from beef, pork, lard, et al. It looks like a salami. It looks like, you know, little salami sticks, and they're really easy to keep in a bag and in your pocket and eat them when you're rolling around. So that's really delicious. Highly recommend those too.
That's fancy Slim Jim, right?
Oh, dude. Where's my at Slim Jim guy? Best comments on the Instagram, I'm telling you. The at Slim Jim kid slides into everyone's comments and is funny AF.
You and I are off the rails. I love this. All right. So, everybody's at home this year now. So Oktoberfest, whether, you know, unless you're in some part of the country that's allowing big groups to get together, which I don't recommend, how do we do this at home? What should people get that most people can get a hold of?
Yeah.
What should we get? How should we do it?
Here's the home Oktoberfest starter kit for you and five of your friends, six people, right? So you're going to want to get some sort of like a wire or something you can make a necklace out of. You're going to want to get the Hanover, something of Hanover pretzels. I forget the brand name.
Snyder of Hanover.
Thank you. Snyder's of Hanover, thick pretzels. You're going to want to string them around your wire, make a necklace out of it. You got to put as many pretzels as will fit. It makes it way cooler for your Instagram photo. So that's step one, the pretzel necklace. You must have that. Step two, per person, at least a 6-pack, maybe more than that, of either Weihenstephan Lager or Weihenstephan Hefeweizen. Highly recommended. If you can get Schneider Edelweiss, I also love that beer. That's an amazing Weiss beer made, you know, wheated, very aromatic and yeasty. And then, you know, you can do a couple other styles. I'm personally also a big fan of Reisdorf Kolsch. So Kolsch is from the town of Cologne. That's, I think, the cleanest style. And that's a lager pilsner style, but it's specifically from Cologne, or we call it Cologne, like the shit you wear if you're trying to mask your own scent. K-L-O-N with the little umlaut on the O. They have their own yeast strain there, so it's called Kolsch. The Reisdorf specifically, I think, is the cleanest, most pretty style. That's just a drink me, drink me, drink me. Don't think about it. It's like you can sit and sip it, but you're just going to want to crush it because it's so refreshing and delicious. And then you're going to want to go down to the old world market.
Old World is the one in Huntington, but you know, not everybody lives in Southern California, but even if you just have a grocery store, you can try to get some, you know, bratwurst.
Get Adele's, you know, if you want to get Emeril Lagasse style, you can go to Costco and get whatever they have for sure.
All right. So you get some bratwurst. Is it legal to throw some like Italian sausages into the mix if people can't get some German sausages?
It's a foul, but I don't think it's illegal. Like, I think you're not going to get kicked out of the game, but I wouldn't, that's not the first place I would go. I'd try to find the German style. I think more importantly would be how much cabbage do you have access to, and have you ever made sauerkraut, or are you just going to buy the pre-made, which I would understand if you want to make that call. It saves you a lot of time.
Some of the pre-mades are good. Some of them honestly are.
So do you have brands you like?
You know, what's the, there's the one brand in the jar. What is the name of it? I have it in my kitchen right now. I should have grabbed it. It's a real clean,
is it white, Steinfeld?
Simple, basic, crunchy. No.
Bubby's?
Yes, that's it. Yes.
So Bubby's is super good. You can find that at all the Whole Foods. The other one that I think maybe is the top pre-made is by McClure's, who they're between Detroit and Brooklyn. They used to make the best chips. Oh my goodness. They made pickle chips, dill pickle chips, the hot ones. Rest in peace, McClure's hot pickle chips, to get off topic. I miss them. I would order 10 cases on Amazon tomorrow if they were available. WTF. I'm a fat kid. I like chips.
No, chips are good. So with the sauerkraut thing, before we talk about you making it really quick, just to close this out, they in the south of Germany, I've had a couple variations of sauerkraut where they actually put what I would call bacon. I'm sure they have a very different name, but bacon in there, and it's kind of heavily peppered. The sauerkraut, it almost has like this brown sandy color. It's not white. Ooh. Like people would notice. And I want to recommend that if you have sauerkraut and you're going to heat it up, and if you want, you can throw some bacon in there, put some extra pepper. And I will tell you, it is a delicious mix to have that kind of salty, smoky flavor with pickled brine flavor. You know, it's really, really wonderful.
Yeah.
I love sauerkraut.
I love that smoky kind of, and you could use speck as well. If you have speck, you can just cut it up into little bits.
I think that's what it was. It was probably speck.
For those who don't know what speck is, we all think prosciutto, you know, it's our American obsession with Italians. We love prosciutto. But if you were to make prosciutto in the north where they all speak German, yet they still have Italian passports, Alto Adige area, they smoke that prosciutto and make it a speck.
That's a big thing in whole animal. Prosciutto. We go through that whole process, spend a lot of time filming it.
Being in a speck cellar is one of the most amazing things that's ever happened in my life in Alto Adige. It's so mind-blowing. But we were talking about sauerkraut, so you got to ferment that, mother. You got to ferment them. Lacto-fermentation. Lactobacillus is the lovely bacteria you find in yogurt, and it helps make other food fermentations happen. And in essence, I mean, sauerkraut a lot of times is someone who just needs to have very German or French attention to detail in their cuts. you want to, you know, either have gone to the CIA to learn how to do all the fancy cuts, or you just have to get really stoned and pay attention and just love to get things right. Don't use a knife when smoking pot. I apologize for that recommendation.
But yeah, don't listen to most of what Matt is recommending, everybody.
What am I recommending?
You're recommending getting stoned and chopping your finger off.
I did not recommend that. I said don't do it. But I love chopping vegetables. For me, it's like a very zen thing. Like, I used to not like doing prep in the kitchen, and now I love it because it's one of the few times in my life where no one's bothering me and I don't have phone calls happening. I can leave my phone on the other side of the room, or I don't have people barking at me telling me what wine they want to drink. Like, it's kind of my moment. Like, doing laundry and chopping vegetables for me is very zen now. So I love getting in the kitchen doing prep. I just was doing it this morning, making a handmade chimichurri. So, like, to zone out, cut up all that cabbage to make your sauerkraut, again, very sober, and getting ready for that lactobacillus to come in and do its work. I mean, it's very important.
That's great. That's great. Well, I mean, this is so fun. I hope people, you know, made it through this podcast and are going to now go get some sausages, get some sauerkraut, get some beers, and enjoy them. You know, this is a time to celebrate. We need to celebrate the princess and the horse racing. It's time.
And Jason, we all know it takes a lot of beer to make great wine.
That is a fact. Any winemaker will attest to that fact. In fact, it's
they
like
sure
everybody
will.
Drinks Modelos and Pabst, Blue Ribbon, and simple beers.
During harvest time, absolutely.
All right, everybody, make sure you grab some beer, go to the store, get some sausages and pretzels, and enjoy Oktoberfest from SOM TV. Thank you all for listening, and Matt, thank you very much for making me laugh. I appreciate it.
Auf Wiedersehen.
Auf Wiedersehen. Thank you, bud.